Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Today we will be reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 20, Bali Maharaj Surrenders the Universe. This will be verse 21 and 22. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So 21 is on the board, so we will recite 21 with repetition. If someone knows the meter, it would be nice. Thank you, Prabhu. Tad Vamanam Rupama Vardhanata Bhutam. Hariranantasya Guna Chayatatmakam. Bhukam Disho Joy Vivara Payodayas. Tinyan rideva rishayo yarasata. Tadvamunam rupam avardata bhutam. Hare anantasya guna chayatmakam. Bhukam disho jor vivara payodayas. Tiryan nidevarishayo yarasata. Tadvamunam rupam avartata bhutam. Harir anantasya guna chayatmakam. Pukam disho jor vivara payodhayas. Tiryan rideva rishayo yadasata. Tadvamanam rupam avartata bhutam. Harir anantasya guna chayatmakam. Pukam disho jor vivara payodayas. Diyanju Devarishayo Yadasata. Tadvamanam rupam avartata tadbuddham. Hare rantasya guna jayatmakam. Ukam dishodur vivara payotayas. Tiryanya devarishayo yarasata. Tadvamanam rupam avartatadbhutam. Adiram tasya guna jayatmakam. Yujur vivara payodayas. Yanya devarishayo yarasata. Advamanam rupam avartadatmanam. Yantasya guna chayatmakam. Ukam dishojor vivara payodayas. Tiryanju devarishayo yarasata. Adir anantasya guna chayatmakam. Ukam dishodur vivara payodayas. Yanya devarishayo yarasata. So I was mistaken. Today we'll read 20 and 21. we'll go ahead and continue with the word for word for 21 since we've already proceeded. So, tat, that, vamanam, incarnation of Lord Vamana. Rupam, form. Avartata, began to increase more and more. Adbhutam, certainly very wonderful. Hare, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anantasya, of the unlimited. Guna Chayatmakam, whose body is expanded by the material energy, consisting of three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. Bhuh, the land. Kham, the sky. Dishah, all directions. Dyoh, the planetary systems. Vivarah, different holes of the universe. Payodayaha, great seas and oceans. Tirak, lower animals, birds and beasts. Nirih, human beings. Devah, demigods. Rishayah, great saintly persons. Yat, wherein. Asata, lived. Translation to verse 21. The unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead had assumed the form of Vamana, then began increasing in size, acting in terms of the material energy, until everything in the universe was within his body, including the earth, the planetary systems, the sky, the directions, the various holes in the universe, the seas, the oceans, the birds, the beasts, human beings, the demigods, and the great saintly persons. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bali Maharaj wanted to give charity to Vamanadev, but the Lord expanded his body in such a way that he showed Bali Maharaj that everything in the universe is already in his body. Actually, no one can give anything to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he is full in everything. Sometimes we see a devotee offering Ganges water to the Ganges. After taking his bath in the Ganges, a devotee takes a palmful of water and offers it back to the Ganges. Actually, when one takes a palmful of water from the Ganges does not lose anything. And similarly, if a devotee offers a palmful of water to the Ganges does not increase in any way. But by such an offering, the devotee becomes celebrated as a devotee of Mother Ganges. Similarly, when we offer anything with devotion and faith, what we offer does not belong to us, nor does it enrich the opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if one offers whatever he has in his possession, he becomes a recognized devotee. In this regard, the example is given that when one's face is decorated with a garland and sandalwood pulp, the reflection of one's face in a mirror automatically becomes beautiful. The original source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is our original source also. Therefore, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead is decorated, the devotees and all living entities are decorated automatically. I'll read the translation to both 20 and 21. So this is verse 20. The Gandharvas, the Kimpurushas, the Kinaras sounded thousands and thousands of kettle drums and trumpets again and again, and they sang in great jubilation, declaring, "How exalted a person is Bali Maharaj, and what a difficult task he has performed." Even though he knew that Lord Vishnu was on the side of his enemies, he nonetheless gave the Lord the entire three worlds in charity. The unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, who had assumed the form of Vamana, then began increasing in size, acting in terms of the material energy, until everything in the universe was within his body, including the earth, the planetary systems, the sky, the directions, the various holes in the universe, the seas, the oceans, the birds, beasts, human beings, the demigods, and the great saintly persons. Oma jnana timaranjasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur ulimintam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nama Om Vishnubaraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Jayapataka Swamini Tinamine. Nama Om Vishnubaraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavari Paschachadesha Tarine. Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Ditanam Pavne Pyo Vaishnave Pyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So at this point in Bhagavatam, Vamanadev had approached Bali Maharaj, humbly requesting three steps of land in the form of a humble dwarf Brahmana Brahmachari. And Shukracharya, the spiritual master of Bali Maharaj, whose instructions Balaram Maharaj faithfully followed to the point of great success in life, coming to the point of conquering the three worlds, objected to the proposal, seeing that Vamanadeva was Lord Vishnu and that offering these humble three steps of land would ultimately be a material loss for him. And Vishnu, being known as a cheater to the demoniac, and so considering the context of Vamanadeva acting on behalf of the demigods, that he shouldn't give this land and should protect his situation in Varnashram. Yes. So, and Balaya Maharaj, in this rare situation, he disobeys the orders of his spiritual master, and acknowledging Vamanadeva's position as Lord Vishnu, agrees to fulfill his promise of the three steps of land. And Vamanadeva here expands in his universal form, and in only two steps, or at this moment he just expands in his universal form, and that form alone encompasses the entire universe. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that an example of this, about everything already belongs to Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada uses the example that when a devotee, oftentimes devotees make pilgrimage to Mother Ganges, and for the sake of spiritual purification, they will bathe in Mother Ganga, and they will take her water and offer it back unto her with devotion. And Prabhupada says that, practically speaking, or materially speaking, that whenever you took water from her, it wasn't yours to offer to begin with. Originally, it belonged to her. And by offering it to her, you're not increasing her in any way. Her opulence was complete as Mother Ganga without that offering. But what is important is that element of devotion. And the situation is, of course, similar with Krishna. Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, verse 4-7, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo, or no, I'm on the wrong chapter. 10-8, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Mata Sarvam Pravartate, that I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Thus, iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitaha. The wise who know this devote themselves unto me. So, this principle is that what's really important is our devotion. An example is from Bhagavad Gita, like Krishna says, whomever gives me a leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I accept that. I accept the devotion by which it is offered. So similarly to Mother Ganga, offering her water is not giving her something that she does not have. And she herself is providing that to you as an offering. Similarly, Krishna, he's asking very simple things from us. Leaves, flowers, fruits, water. These things are available anywhere that is habitable for humans. So these things are very simple to acquire, and Krishna himself is providing those things. So the important thing is actually the devotion with which it's offering. It's an opportunity to express our devotion. So we have two things that are happening. One is the external, that which Krishna is asking for, and the other is the internal, the devotion by which that is offered. Yesterday in her lecture, Krishna Archanamachaji was speaking about material education and how the focus on the externals the material life is completely void of the context, of the internal context, that our eternal constitutional position is a servant of the Lord. So the externals should be related to that. Whereas in the material education, the externals are focusing on how to lord it over the material universe and the concept that we are this body. And Krishna says, or Srila Prabhupada said this in a purport, that he's elucidating how really insignificant we are. He's saying that in the universe, in the unlimited universes, there are actually millions of Lord Brahmas. And Lord Brahma is extremely, exalted, powerful, living entity. And there are millions of him. There's even a pastime where Lord Brahma, he's going to visit Lord Vishnu, and he knocks on the door of Vaikuntha, I think, and the two gatekeepers there, they say, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm Lord Brahma." And the two gatekeepers say, "Which one?" And so Lord Brahma's foreheads are completely blown, and he comes to realize that there are Lord Brahmas with millions of heads. So, our Lord Brahma, who's the head of our Sampradaya, only has four heads, but he is a devotee of the Lord, so it's okay. Yeah. So, Prabhupada says, even from Lord Brahma, of which there are millions, all the way down to the tiniest ant, of which there are millions of millions, I'm adding that extra part. Everyone is trying to lord it over the material nature. So we can see that even the tiny ant is very puffed up. Right? And the materialistic education is actually serving to puff people up. They're desiring to give you these material external designations which are contrary to your true constitutional position in relation to the Lord. For instance, when you're growing up as a child, very often, you know, you're asked, what do you want to be when you grow up, right? And this material education is to serve that idea of what you want to be, and it's on the platform of being productive in society. I want to be a fireman, I want to be a policeman, I want to be a rock star, or a doctor, right? Whereas in devotional service, our goal is actually to move beyond these external designations and really see our real position in relationship to the Lord. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is said, Sarvopadi Vinir Muktam. This is one of, there's two things that happen when one practices devotional service. One is that their senses become controlled. And then the other one is that one actually becomes free from external designations. So that very thing that an exclusively materialistic education is giving us is actually that thing that we're desiring to be free from. So, when we begin practicing devotional service, there's a lot of focus on the do's and don'ts. Because we're coming from a material, we are conditioned by a material way of thinking, where this is the material world, and we have to use it to our material advantage. Whatever we learn, and whatever skills we develop, they can help us to eat and sleep, and find a suitable partner, and defend what our secure position in this material world, exclusively for those means. And then when we come to Krishna consciousness, of course, there's some transition there. Generally, many people have a spiritual impetus before coming here. They're desiring to go beyond that because they can see the limitation that at the end of the day, what's the point? You know, I'm going to die. This doesn't prepare me for death. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're looking for spiritual activities and a spiritual way of life that's conducive to our true constitutional position as a servant of God. And that starts with the externals. In this case, Bali Maharaj has surrendered everything to Krishna. And in the preface to the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, it's mentioned the surrendering process. And this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, though I can't reference it directly, though I'd like to, so if everyone knows the verse, you could let me know, I'd appreciate it. But I'll just give the translation that exists there from the preface to Chaitanya Charitamrita. The process of surrender. Because our goal in spiritual life is to surrender to Krishna. And we're following a process given to us by the acharyas, by our spiritual masters. And there's 6 items to this process. And it begins with that external element. Accept things favorable to discharging devotional service is one. And the second one is reject things unfavorable to devotional service. So if we were able to follow those principles perfectly as they are, actually all the details to the regulative principles would be given, right? For instance, abstaining from mundane sense gratification, right? This is not favorable to devotional service, right? Or intoxicants, right? Not consuming intoxicants, or not gambling or engaging in risky behavior. See, risky behavior is that we're acting based on our mind's whim, whereas the instructions of the spiritual master are keeping us in line with what should be properly done. And then, of course, abstaining from eating meat and things. Well, in the context of devotional service, we simply offer what Krishna likes to consume, and we take his remnants. That alone also omits intoxicants. Krishna desires fruits, vegetables, milk products, grains. So in that alone, automatically that regulative principle would be followed. So in the context of devotional service, we're automatically successful in the regulative principles. I remember when I was staying in Mayapur, in Bhakti Shastri, we were asked, like, what are the regulative principles? I was asked, it was like a play, like a drama. And I was asked, I was like faking initiation, like in the thing. And they asked me for the regulative principles, and I kind of went blank on some of the principles. You see, when I was living in South Korea as an English teacher, I was very aware of the regulative principles. Because I was constantly thinking, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that, right? Because the temptation was so strong there. Whereas in Mayapur, when I just had association with devotees, I completely forgot the regulative principles, because in the association of devotees, where devotional service is in the forefront, it's a given. You don't have to think about it. It's not even considered, right? And that's a very fortunate position to be in. And many of us living in the temple and closely connected to the temple community can take advantage of that huge blessing that by being engaged like this in the association, these principles, these externals are in many ways automatically followed. It's a huge blessing, really. And then the importance part comes in. Giridhari Prabhu often emphasizes this, and I appreciate it very much because it's, again, I'm meditating on it a lot. The internal element. And believe firmly, this is number 3, believe firmly in the Lord's protection. So, and there's one way to take to this process of believing firmly in the Lord's protection is by reading Prabhupada's books and by reading Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. Because very often, Srila Prabhupada is really, how do you say? Prabhupada is emphasizing the fact that Krishna will take care of you and that the spiritual master will take care of you. And Krishna himself says that whoever engages in my devotional service, I have to paraphrase a bit, forgive me, that I preserve what he has and gives what he lacks. So Krishna is taking direct care of us. And even in Ishopanishad, it is said there, it confirms it as well. So in the first verse of Ishopanishad, it's this similar to the verse of Ahamsa Vasya Prabhavo. It's Ishavasya Idam Sarvam Yan Kincha Jagatam Jagat, right? That everything in the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. And then it follows to say that Tena Chaktena Bunchita Amagrita Kashyasvit Danam. Therefore, only accept what is given to you as your quota and do not desire those things that are it's Magrita Kashyasvit Danam. The translation Prabhupada gives is and do not accept other things. In the word for word, it's related to like an attachment to other wealth. And then following that, so we're living in that principle in Krishna consciousness that to serve Krishna, he's providing exactly what we need. And then it follows by saying, the next verse is that a man can continue for hundreds of years living in this way. So Krishna is supporting you. As long as you follow these principles, Krishna will support you for hundreds of years, speaking in terms of a human. And he says, moreover, it says moreover that there is no other option for you because everything else will give you karma. Everything else will subject you to the laws of karma. As Varaha says to Hiranyaksha before he kills him, you are subject to the laws of death. Right? Everything else is under that subject of karma where it's temporary. The three modes are constantly moving it in this direction and that direction. You're not in control. So understanding how insignificant we are, right, really helps us surrender in this context, that if we try to act independently, we won't be in control. We'll be overwhelmed by the material energy. So instead, we can surrender knowing that Krishna will take care of us. So still, we are not in control, we are still insignificant, part and parcel of Krishna, but Krishna is directly taking care, and that shelter is there. We take shelter of the material world, then we go into the illusion that I am taking care, and that's where the mind becomes very disturbed, because we are insignificant. The next one, number four, feel exclusively dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So the tendency remains, even when we're in devotional service, we may think, one example is that we may think that still I'm relying on my own skill. I'm a big shot. I got this under control. But that constant mood of actually Krishna is the one both allowing me the service, and by the mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master, I'm empowered to perform those services. And this is very powerful. Not only does it give us the strength to perform the services which are generally expected of us, on that platform, it gives us the strength to perform services which we may not otherwise think that we can do. Because the mercy of the Lord, as Krishna Arjuna also had mentioned yesterday in her lecture, that without Krishna, very easy things become impossible. But with Krishna, the other side of that, with Krishna, even extremely difficult things become very easy. And five, have no interest separate from the interests of the Lord. So this is moving in areas that are difficult to speak on even, having no interest separate from the interests of the Lord. When we come to Krishna consciousness, we come with a lot of baggage, so to speak. So we have a lot of our own interests. And even in the context of practicing devotional service, the false ego may interfere with the ability to perform services, to do the needful. It said one symptom of a neophyte, or a neophyte symptom, like a neophyte symptom is that one does services that they like to do, but not services that they dislike, right? So the tendency to act whimsically is still remains a bit, in that they're still on the platform of like and dislike. And again, one is taking shelter of the mind, because liking something and disliking something is on the mental platform, on the platform of the senses and the mind, comfort and discomfort. Whereas one gets intelligence by really following the instructions of the spiritual master, and by following the example of sadhus who are following the instructions of the spiritual master. And finally, 6, always feels oneself meek and humble. So we may be acting in Krishna consciousness, and we can have a lot of success. And the sense of doership may come in. Again, like, I am the doer. And everything else becomes lost. So feeling oneself meek and humble holds that position that I am a simple servant of Krishna and his devotees. And that way we'll always be guided on the right path. Of course, these 6 principles are quite deep, and I'm only touching on them in a way that I can do with a reasonable amount of preparation that I had. And I would like to touch on a side note, if I may, to elaborate on something about the externals, because the majority of my spiritual life, like in terms of time, has been on that platform of working with externals, as even just following the principles. And the thing is that the externals can be there even in a non-devotee. So, like certain regulative principles, right, without the context of devotional service, can be there. And it lends to pride. When I, just personal example, when I joined the movement, I was already vegetarian. I was already abstaining from intoxicants, these things I was following. I was conscious of these things. And in different philosophies, these principles can be there, but they're not complete in of themselves. For instance, an ethicist, an ethical person, right? Like a vegan, an ethical vegan. They may be abstaining from meat eating and these things, right? Even there's an ethical group called Straight Edgers. And there's straight edgers, it's like living on the edge, right? There are straight edgers that actually follow the 4 regulative principles out of an ethical principle. Or they're attempting to, I don't know how successful they are. Right. So let's say, on the platform of that, one's following these principles simply out of an ethical consideration, which is good. If you carry it down the road, what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to cause no harm, right? This is often the main central part of their philosophy. And this philosophy exists in Vedic culture. There's different sects like Jains. So the ultimate is like the Jain who lives in a very secluded place, right? He doesn't even walk without sweeping in front of him. His mouth is covered with a cloth so that he doesn't inhale any unnecessary living entities, thus taking their life. And if he does eat, he only accepts fruit which falls naturally from a tree, right? So the tree is not harmed, right? This is a very extreme ethicist, ethical person, right? So you take the atheistic-minded person who thinks they're being ethical, they should do that. If they truly adhere to that philosophy, they should take it to that extreme, right? And even then, in this human body, all you're doing is exploiting. Even just the constant living of the human body, millions of tiny microorganisms are dying. So actually, real success in a utilitarian ethical philosophy, as Prabhupada says, is actually suicide. Just kill yourself. Instant success. Your very existence in this material world is innately exploitative. So the best we can do is actually utilize this material energy in the service of Krishna and act on that transcendental spiritual platform. So this was one example I thought I would bring up, because in terms of our preaching, sometimes we emphasize externals, right? Which is good. I mean, these are also important. But not to forget that we're representing a higher philosophy. And not to lose sight of that. So, if there are any questions or comments.
Hare Krishna Bhavan. Hello. Hare Krishna. Thank you for your class. What was I going to say? This verse says, in the purport, Prabhupada mentions that when we offer devotion to the Lord is not like elated, like, you love me. Thank God, because in the material in the material world, that's the tendency. When we glorify someone, they become more fulfilled, and if we insult someone, they become less fulfilled. But that's not the Lord's situation. We're actually benefit. And we hear that better than serving the Lord, this is kind of the direction I'm going, better than serving the Lord is his devotees. That verse says, I think, Gopi Bartu Kamala Yor Dasa Dasa Anudasa, something like that. That I'm not a Brahmin, a Satriya, etc. I'm the servant of the servant of the servant. There's many verses that said better than worship of the Lord is glorifying his devotees. So my comment and question is kind of related to that point, because we see in the material world that as practicing devotees, if we glorify another devotee, they may or may not benefit, but it's ultimately for our own benefit. Just like if we offend devotees, it may or may not be harmful to them, depending on their humility and consciousness, but it's ultimately harmful for us, just like that verse says, Bhakti Swabha Vagya Dosha Shamakati. Krishna Swabha Bhakti Ninda Sahite Napati. That devotees could tolerate offenses of others because they're very forgiving. They don't think they deserve respect. But Krishna cannot tolerate, you know, offenses to his devotees or anyone really, because everyone's a part and parcel of Krishna. So my point is kind of related to this. You were mentioning the Brahma pastime, that he thought he was the Michael Jordan of the universe, basically. And the gatekeeper said, there's better Michael Jordans than you, basically. And there's a quote that says, everyone is tolerant of the praises of others as long as he thinks he could do much better. And I'm sure if Lord Brahma saw someone with less heads, you know, I'm superior to them. But when he saw someone with more heads, so how can we get into the ideal that glorifying devotees who externally seem superior to us because of their Krishna, actually they're not superior to us because Krishna is inspiring everyone with that all the abilities, so we're really envious of Krishna, but still, how do we get into the devotional path of glorifying devotees who we externally perceive to be superior to us, because it's very easy to glorify devotees who are inferior to us. That's easy because, you know, this arrogance comes on that, who cares, you know, I'm better than you. But at the same time, because just like we see that it's very easy to glorify Krishna or devotees in Bhagavatam or devotees who have died because there's no competition for us today. But it's very difficult to honor and glorify devotees who may be getting some recognition due to their abilities. And we think that if we honor devotees, then that's going to put us out of the spotlight. But it actually is contrary, puts us in the spotlight, because Krishna is very pleased with our humility, like you were mentioning, the six aspects of surrender. So how can we rewire our brain of not thinking that glorifying devotees who are sternly superior to us will put us out of the spotlight? On the contrary, it's not that material motive that I want to be in the spotlight, but you know what I mean. So can you explain? Sorry, but try to organize right. It. But.
So for me, when I see a problem that I have, this is a problem, right? This envy or glorifying, but not being able to glorify because actually you want that quality. When I see a problem, I try to find the root of it. That way you're dealing with something, you want to deal with the source of things. The closer you get to the source of something, the more you will benefit from that kind of work, right? We can. So this is with all things. So to apply it in this situation, as far as I can go, is that that the tendency to. So first of all, we see that, okay, we're envious of this person. They have some external quality that. Or even maybe internal quality that we're envious of, so we can't really glorify them. Now, the external quality is particularly bad situation in that, like you said, we are all, first we understand we're all actually parts and parcel of Krishna, and we have our eternal identity and relationship with Him. So any judgments of being better than someone or worse than someone is automatically, we can see that's on a material platform. Because Krishna loves me for who I am, right? Which is His eternal servant, and I could be, you know, a cow in the spiritual world or a bucket, but I'm fully satisfied in that position because that's who I am. And I'm fully satisfied. In the spiritual world, we are spontaneously in loving ecstasy of the Supreme Lord. So there's no question of becoming this or acting in this way or acting in that way. We're spontaneously perfect. Yeah. It's very contrary to the material conception where we're moving towards perfection or we have to choose the correct thing to do, right? Whereas on that planet, you're spontaneously perfect. So your will even is perfect. It's quite beautiful. So here, the tendency, it's a material tendency. First, we're seeing the envy there, right? And then closer is that we're seeing a lack in ourselves. And one way that only recently I've been exploring this is that holding on to the shelter of Krishna. And that Krishna, again, I'm referring to the lecture yesterday because I've been thinking a lot. Krishna Arjuna Mahasaji had mentioned that the internal situation, the internal consciousness, is that which is transcendental to the external details. And so we. Even in Krishna consciousness, we're performing devotional service, but we're still comparing externally. And generally, it's because we're still taking shelter of an external situation, an external idea. So, whereas at any moment, you can be fully Krishna conscious. At any moment, in any situation, we can actually be fully Krishna conscious by being completely satisfied with the service that we're doing in that particular moment. At any moment, we can be fully satisfied with the service we're performing at that particular moment. And if that's there, then there's no question of the other things. And it also, being satisfied with the services we're doing, helps one focus on the more important thing, which is the quality in which we're doing it, and the mood in which we're doing it. I personally do spend a lot of time, my mind is occupied with externals. Like, I want to be this kind of devotee. And I, you know, when I'm this age, I want to have this kind of service and that kind of service. Huh? But as long as our mind is in there, and that's, and our devotional service that we're doing now is tinged with that desire, then we're acting outside of the needful and the instructions that we're given. There's a tendency to be a little independent in this area, thinking that it will bring us there, right? Right? Then you're actually relying on the material energy, because it's a bit whimsical, right? This is the way the material conditioning is. I act in this way to build up my position in the future, right? Whereas in Krishna consciousness, we humbly serve, and Krishna's making the arrangements. So it's very important that we take the shelter of some instructions from seniors and really follow them faithfully. I am certainly, I mean, this is one thing I struggle with a lot, so I can relate to that. And just to mention, because we did have a service yesterday for a devotee who recently left the world, and one thing I noticed is his sisters, both of his sisters had spoke about him. Forgive me, I don't know his name. I know he was called Joseph. Jyotirmaya Prabhu. They were... Okay, yes. Yeah, forgive me. I'm not familiar with who he is, but I was very inspired that their glorifications of him were completely the... They completely glorified the content of his character. And I was extremely touched. And Mataji mentioned that her last experience with him was they had dinner together. And after dinner, he looked at her very serenely and said, I'm very happy to have had dinner with you. I'm very grateful to have had dinner with you. He was very appreciative of that moment together. And I immediately thought that Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness means to be a perfect gentleman. And I think that this devotee, like, he was that, and he's appreciated for that. Just the his character was so great. And that's what we'll be remembered for. Hare Krishna. Sure. Marcel has a question if you were. But you can follow up briefly.
Well, you could briefly answer it, but you were mentioning we could be satisfying Krishna consciousness in any situation immediately, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times devotees say, I could be satisfied whatever service I'm doing for Krishna. But we hear that Krishna says that even better than glorifying him is kind of back to my original point, but maybe you could elaborate on a little tiny bit. Is better than glorifying him is glorifying other devotees. So my question is, can we be satisfied without appreciating other living devotees? Because we repeat the Bhagavatam, of course, and maybe devotees who have passed away, but is it possible to be satisfied without appreciating devotees who we're living with, to make the environment like less negative, at least, at the minimum?
Well, yes, it's not possible. Yeah, it's not possible to be satisfied if we're not appreciative, for sure. Yeah, definitely not. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for the class. You brought up a lot of really nice points. I can relate very much to what you said about following the four regulative principles outside of the context of devotional service. whereas I was in a athlete training program when I was in high school that also followed the four regulative principles. And so I followed the four regulative principles as best as I could in the context that this is going to, and not that, oh, I'm doing this because I'm serving Krishna or anything. It was, I want to be the best athlete that I can. I want to be better than the other people. So by doing this, I'll have extra power and, you know. Anyway, I could very much relate to that. And I also came to the understanding that without devotional service, it's not possible to continue on following these four regulative principles because there's, it, you reach a limit. Either with yourself or with society, and you know, you stray away from them. So I appreciate. Thank you for sharing that. That was very nice. You you talked about the designations that society will give to us, and I remember we had joked around one time saying, when we were kids, we would say, "Oh, what do you want to be? Or what do you want to be when you grow up?" Or even to the point of, "Oh, how cool would it be if you were an animal? What animal would you want to be?" You know, oh yeah, I want to be a shark or a dolphin, something. And even you gave the context of vegans. And recently I went to the hospital to get some tests done. And when I told them I was a vegetarian, this other person had heard me and said, oh, I'm also a vegetarian. And then I met another, oh, I'm also a vegetarian, or I'm a vegan. So I'm wondering, in the context of our devotional service, can it be a hindrance to also identify ourselves with these sort of things? That, you know, we often hear Srila Prabhupada, I am an American, I am Jewish, I am this, I am that. And what about, I'm a vegetarian, I'm a devotee. All these things, are these positive, can these be positive designations for us? Alongside with, I'm a servant of the servant of Krishna? Or is this, can these designations also be a hindrance to us in the overall scheme of things?
I'm curious to know what Krishna Arjuna Machaji thinks about that. Though I could... I think all external designations are a hindrance to our devotional life. All external designations. As a simple answer. Because our real constitutional position, we don't know, actually. We know it's a servant, but the details of that, we don't know. So we're humbly serving, and by Krishna's mercy, that will be revealed to us. However, external designations are important when they're of practical value, right? So it's like the Yukta Vairagya principle. So for instance, a cell phone, right? It can be used in ways that destroy your spiritual life, right? But it can also be used very helpfully in your service to Krishna, right? So similarly, identifying our external designation can be a tool. Like, if you want to be, say you want to be polite to someone who doesn't understand Krishna consciousness, right? I mean, maybe you don't want to speak on the platform of, I only accept foodstuffs that are remnants of the Lord, because that's, if it's not offered, you're just eating sin. I mean, that's a bit far. But another tool, I mean, to judge them on their level is, oh, I'm vegetarian, right? Right? Something. So you're using it as a tool, or, I mean, for instance, like, our temple president is Hemangi Mataji, right? So there's a reason she has that title, temple president, right? It helps us understand our hierarchy here and how things work, right? And who's the authority of what department. For instance, Radharaman Prabhu, I think, is the treasurer, right? So that's an external designation, and it's important because if there's a question financially or something, you know who to ask, right? So it's a tool, right? The danger is, you know, I am the treasurer of the temple, right? And then the other danger is, oh, you know, I'm just the pot washer, right? The external designation, we think that is not important in terms of our devotional life, right? But it's important as a tool because, you know, if the pots need to be washed, they need to know who to ask, right? And so you can proudly do it. Whereas if the budget needs to be balanced, they need to know who to ask. So it's a tool, and in that way it's very valuable. But in terms of, I am this, it's not helpful. And if I can continue, just using the word I a lot is a symptom of falling into this. I've recognized it, like, in myself, when the false ego is there, I start using the word I a lot. And later I feel like, oh, I'm talking about myself a lot, huh? So, it's a part of it. So I noticed, like, one thing the Buddhists have going for them is, see, they're really anti-ego, right? Of course, we distinguish false ego from true ego, or true ego being a servant of Krishna, right? Isn't it? So, in that case, we're rejecting the false ego that I am the proprietor and these things. Whereas, one nice, like, I used to quote this a lot. I used to use Buddhist philosophy to disturb the minds of people before I was a devotee. So, there's one Buddhist parable I'll share. It's like a story, a Buddhist story. And a monk and a man who's living in the temple with the monk, right? And he's visiting the monk and observing his activities. So throughout the day and the night. And after he spends a couple days with the monk, he says to the monk, right? I see that you wake up, you shower, you prepare your meal, you clean, right? You do some work. And, you know, you meditate or do some relaxing activity in his perspective. He says, actually, many of your activities are the same as mine, right? He says, it's a Buddhist man. He's, like, working and doing these things. And he has duties, and he's performing them. So he says to him, what's the difference between you and me? He says to the Buddhist. And the Buddhist says, the difference between you and I is that when I am washing the pots, I am washing the pots. But when you are washing the pots, you are doing many things. So that concept of doership, he's thinking who I am who's washing these pots, or what will I gain from washing these pots, things like that. So you can twist it into a Krishna conscious story. You can say, when I'm washing the pots, I'm doing it for Krishna. And when you're washing the pots, you are doing many things. Of course, a devotee may not say it that way. But the principle is there. That sense of doership, that I, is not helpful in spiritual life. So like, I'm washing the pots for Krishna. You can say, like, the word I is there, right? I'm washing the pots for Krishna. So, we're washing the pots. Well, without the false ego that may creep in, by whose mercy am I able to wash these pots for Krishna? And by what strength do I have to do this? I'm a bit lost, probably because I'm talking about Buddhist philosophy. Thinking too much about it. Yes, Prabhu.
I'm sorry, I'm taking more time. So, to answer that question that Madhava Gauranga Prabhu asked, I have a very nice example. Like that, in Krishna book, you must have read that even slight egoism, you know, prideness, if it comes in your service, devotional service, Krishna immediately crushes that. If you are a pure devotee. Like, for example, you know what? All gopis, they are in rasa dance. Oh, they were thinking, oh, Krishna is with us. Little, slight egoism came. Krishna is with me. They became puffed up, little bit, in mentally. You know? So then what happened? Krishna disappeared. And they are looking, They felt so much separation, so many things. They started crying, where is Krishna, where is Krishna? See, this is the situation. So we have to be very careful. Even if you are in devotional service, that's you told very nice thing. Simple, little egoism comes. Finish. So only you have to, that is not a designation. It's not called designation. Designation in sense means it is material concept. Oh, but in devotional service, it is not designation. However, designation is associated with egoism. Every case. So, you, once it will be known, you will pop up, oh, I am a very good devotee, I know so many things, I am doing so much service, you are finished. As Krishna will crush your egoism immediately. So, you have to be very careful. But if you say, no, I am a good devotee, I am doing so many things, if you are popped up, that's the problem. But if you simply satisfy Krishna, no, I am doing everything for the sake of Krishna. Krishna should be satisfied. That essence of your heart is required. So, you need not to expose that I am a good devotee. That is why Lord Chaitanya says, there in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that means a devotee becomes famous by his devotional service. Any person, he becomes famous. How he will become famous? By through his devotional service. Automatically, you know, everybody will appreciate you. You don't have to tell others, oh, I'm doing so many things, something for temple. It will automatically come. Samasate Sura, that is very nice. You know how all demigod qualities you will acquire by course of your devotional service. Sarvair tatra guna samaseta suraha. Means you will get, actually, everything will develop automatically. And what we have to be careful same time. And also, another point I want to add in your class. You said very nice thing. Krishna Archana Mataji was telling, when you think Krishna, you know, every difficult things will become easy. That is actually a little modification. I'm actually, Ramapada Maharaj, he was giving class in, I think, couple years back in Nityananda Trayodashi, couple or 3 years back somewhere, he was giving class here. He said, if you remember Lord Nityananda's activities, everything will be easy. Difficult things will be easy. So, that is what I want to do. Yes, Krishna's activities and Lord Nityananda's activities, there is no difference, but little more palatable if you go more deeper to the Lord Nityananda's activities. That is what Balaram Prabhu was giving this class, this Nityananda Trayodashi. He was telling how he was giving example. In Balaram avatar, in incarnation of Lord Balaram, he was very angry mood all the times. Even Romaharsana, one devotee, you know, he could not give proper respect to Lord Balaram. That's why he killed him. You know, immediately he killed him. Because Lord Balaram was popped up in that incarnation. But however, Lord Nityananda, although he was hit by Jagai Madhai, but he was very humble. You know, even Lord Chaitanya, he used to tell, he used to teach, you know, Sikhastam. Sikhastakam what? Tunadapi sunichena, tarropi sunichena, amanena manadena kirtana sadahari. He was teaching. Become humble. But he himself become angry. You know, he took the, he called for Sudarshan to kill Jagai Madhavi. But under that circumstance, if you analyze, Lord Nityananda came and caught hold of him. So who is more compassionate? Lord Nityananda. So therefore, if you remember Lord Nityananda's activities, difficult things will be easy. So in this, particular in this present tense, when Kali Yuga, in a quarrel of years.
Thank you, Prabhu. Now I'm thinking of Lord Nityananda. So, yeah. I think generally we're allowed to go till 9 o'clock. But.
I was appreciating Karuna. I was appreciating Karuna Nidhi's comments about, like, you don't have to tell anyone I'm a great devotee. If Krishna's pleased, not that you're looking for the fame, but as Lord Chaitanya said, he was mentioning that Lord Chaitanya says one becomes famous by his devotion and not by trying to, you know, one's promotion or trying to promote oneself. And there's a quote, my favorite quote in this regard. It says, we are told to let our light shine, and if it does, we won't need to tell anybody it does. Lighthouses don't fire cannons to call attention to their shining. They just shine. And that was Prabhupada's case. I was just reading a purport recently where Prabhupada mentioned that when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's mission crumbled because devotees, the disciples were fighting, who's the supreme? No, I'm the best devotee. I should be in this position. No, I'm the best devotee. And from that, and from Karuna's Nidhi's comments, we can understand that if Krishna wants you in a prestigious position because he's satisfied with your devotion of being more concerned about being less concerned about the spotlight and more concerned about the inner light, then you'll be put in a prestigious position like Prabhupada. He wasn't concerned about fighting. No, I'm the supreme. I'm Prabhupada. But if Krishna doesn't want you in a prestigious position, just like they were bickering, then none of them became, even though they tried to get a prestigious position, none of them got the prestigious position. So it was all a waste of time. So you don't have to tell anyone, you know, if Krishna wants you there, then you'll be there. And if he doesn't, you'll be satisfied wherever Krishna puts you. Narayana pada sarvinakutashana bibhyati swarga pavargana dakeshu apitulyata darshinaha. A devotee is satisfied in heaven, hell, the spiritual world, the non-spiritual world, wherever Krishna puts me. And that's the devotee's fame. He's satisfied in any circumstance. Sorry about that.
I very much like your analysis of the... I like that, Prabhu, you tend to identify a problem very clearly, and then you give a lot of reference related to that. So it really gets my mind thinking. I very much appreciate that. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Vanchakalpa chirubhyascha kripasindu bhyevacha patitanam pavane pyo vaishnave pyo namo namaha. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai.